Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivas Adigaura Bhakti Vrindaki Shishi Radha Krishna Go Gopakopina Shyamakunda Radha Kundigiri Gopakani Shri Vrindavan Dhamaki Shri Mayapur Dhamaki Ganga Maiki Jamuna Maiki Bhakti Deviki Tulasi Deviki Samavita Bhakti Vrindaki Jainita Gaura Vrindaki All glories to some of the devotees. All glories to some of the devotees. All glories to some of the devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. All glories to Sri Guru. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Maharishayo
Vai
Samupagata
Ye
Prasasya Sadvitya Anumodamana Uchu Prajano
Graha
Shila
Sara
Yad Uttama Loka Unadhirupam Maharshayo Vai Samupagataye Prasasya Sadvityana Modamana
Prasasya Sadvityana Modamana
Uchu Prajanu Grahashila Sara
Uchu Prajanu Grahashila Sara
Yaruttama Shloka Guna Virupam
Yaruttama Shloka Guna Virupam
Maharshayo Vai Samupadathaye Prasasya Sadvityana Modamana
Prasasya Sadvityana Modamana
Uchuf Prajanu Grahashila Sara
Uchuf Prajanu Grahashila Sara
Yaruttama Shloka Guna Virupam
Yaruttama Shloka Guna Virupam
Maharshayo Vai Samupagataye Prasasya Sadvityana Modamana Uchu Prajanu Grahashila Sara
Uchu Prajanu Grahashila Sara
Yaruttama Shloka Guna Virupam
Yaruttama Shloka Guna Virupam
Prasasya, by praising.
Sadhu,
quite all right. Iti, thus.
Anumodamana,
all approving. Uchu,
said.
Praja anugraha,
doing good to the living being.
Shila Sara, qualitatively powerful. Yet,
because.
Uttama Shloka,
one who is praised
by selected poems.
Guna Abhirupam,
as beautiful as godly qualities.
As
Translation.
All the great sages who were assembled there also praised the decision of Maharaj Parikshit, and they expressed their approval by saying, "Very good." Naturally, the sages were inclined to do good to common men, for they have all the qualitative powers of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, they were very much pleased to see Maharaj Parikshit, a devotee of the Lord, and they spoke as follows. Purport. The natural beauty of a living being is enhanced by rising up to the platform of devotional service. Maharaj Parikshit was absorbed in attachment for Lord Krishna. Seeing this, the great sages assembled there were very pleased, and they expressed their approval by saying, "Very good." Such sages are naturally inclined to do good to the common man, and when they see a personality like Maharaj Parikshit advance in devotional service, their pleasure knows no bounds, and they offer all blessings in their power. The devotional service of the Lord is so auspicious that all demigods and sages, up to the Lord himself, become pleased with the devotee, and therefore the devotee finds everything auspicious. All inauspicious matters are removed from the path of the progressive devotee. Meeting all the great sages at the time of death was certainly auspicious for Maharaj Parikshit, and thus he was blessed by the so-called curse of a Brahmin boy. So the living entity, by nature, is attractive, is beautiful. But this beauty comes from life, and life comes from attachment. We see that if someone is attached to you, then they look very attractive. They deal very nicely. The mood is good, because beauty is a mood. It's not the body. Unfortunately, people not knowing this, then the cosmetic industry and other such industries make great profit in this world. But it's actually the mood that creates beauty. It's not the body. The body may have, as a vehicle, may have elements that may be able to express more detail of beauty, but it's not actually the cause of the beauty. The beauty is coming from the nature of the living entity, the mood of the living entity. That's where it's from. So the attachment is making that. So if there's strong attachment, depending upon where it is, then one will see more or less beauty. Like the mother is very attractive looking because of the affection for the children. So then the mood is very nice and very pleasant, and the children find it very wonderful. If you have friends, they have nice mood, then they look very attractive. So this is natural. So Prabhupada is saying the natural beauty of a living entity is enhanced by rising up the platform of devotional service. Because the point is because he's absorbed in attachment for Krishna. So Krishna being the most beautiful, the most attractive, if we're attached to him, that makes the devotee the most attractive. Right? So that's the devotee's attractiveness, is that attachment to Krishna. So that's the real cause of beauty, is this attachment to Krishna. So seeing this, then the sages are very happy, because you can perceive the advancement, you can perceive that they're progressing. So the Lord likes to see someone progress, because then that means when they are coming to their natural position, they are happy. Right? Krishna is happy. He is Atmarama. He likes to see others happy. Right? Because he sees them as non-different from him, so they should have the same nature. They should be manifesting. And then that interaction between two happy persons then creates more happiness, greater happiness. So the sages, being qualitatively the same as the Lord in qualities, then they have the same nature, the same interest to see others advance. Right? Because it's not a matter of position. Advancement's not to do with that. That may come with it, but it is not the advancement. The advancement is the attachment to the Supreme Lord. That's the symptom. So when that is seen, one is happy. Right? Prabhupada mentions that a devotee is happy when someone who joined later than them is seen to advance quicker. One is pleased with this. Right? That is nice, because then you have good association. You have good... The more the good association, the better the environment. Because the environment is created by association. That's the most important element. So they're giving their blessings. So it's not just they appreciate, they also are blessed. They're happy to see others advance. And they're hoping that others will advance. So this is there. The Lord is pleased when the devotees are pleased. When the devotees are hoping for our advancement, then naturally the Lord makes all arrangements. We may ask, but that's nice. But if others ask, then that's even more nice. So then, Prabhupada then makes a point of the auspiciousness, because this is all they've said that's very good. They are pleased, it's all auspicious. But one may say, how can it be auspicious? Maharaj Parikit is sitting on the bank of the Ganga with nothing, and he's going to die in 7 days being bitten by a snake bird. So one may think, this is not auspicious, right? But it depends upon your definition of auspiciousness. It means remembering the Lord, that is auspicious. Not remembering the Lord, that is not auspicious. Right? If one doesn't appreciate prasad, doesn't appreciate devotees, doesn't appreciate the name, then one is considered to have hellish intelligence. That means one may not notice it, but one is in hell, right? It means people who live in hell, it becomes normal for them, right? You know, we're living in this place, and we think it's okay, you know, when things don't go so wrong. But in the heavenly planets, they'll consider this to be not so nice, right? And if you go to the lower planets, they'll think this place is great, right? This is like the heavenly planets. So one gets conditioned. That one's hellish mentality, one starts to think this is normal and this is fine. But unfortunately, it's not auspicious. Auspicious means we appreciate the devotees. We like the association of devotees. We're able to take advantage of the association of devotees. Parikit Maharaj asks if he always had that remembrance of the Lord, the association of devotees, and friendship with all living entities. No one, he doesn't see anyone as his enemy. Seeing someone as enemy, that's material consciousness. Like that. The devotee doesn't see anyone as enemy. They may be his enemy, but he's not theirs. Right? Because whatever you do, each individual is different. It's going to annoy somebody somewhere. It's just, that's guaranteed. Somebody doesn't like. I mean, even Krishna, who's the reservoir of all good qualities, a lot of people were annoyed by him. You know, so it's just the way it goes. People didn't like the Pandavas. Like that. People criticized Radharani. Like that. So it's just, it's the way life is. You know, it's just kind of one of those things, you just got to get used to it. Right? Everything can be perfect, and everyone's, you know, everything works nicely, and this and that, and, you know, but that's for the, you know, how you say, the JWs, you know, it's all like, that's works for them, you know. You'd be there and, you know, riding around in your boat with a, your daughter can play with the big lions and tigers and it's all fun and they all talk and it's like, you know, a cartoon show. But that's maybe some people's idea of a good situation, but unfortunately the reality is that in the material world it's not like that. There's always a problem, always a difficulty. So only when it's connected to the Lord, then it becomes nice. So even the worst situation, if it's connected to the Lord, it's actually good. So that's the thing. There's nothing except for not having the association of devotees and having the association of the non-devotees. There's nothing inauspicious in this world if we're remembering the Lord. So any situation becomes favorable. The example here being Pulkit Maharaj or Grandfather Bhishma, right? You know, one might not take it as, you know, how one would consider the most ideal Krishna conscious situation to be riddled with so many arrows you can't stick two fingers between any one of them. And that's where you sleep. You know, you lie there. You know, at least you're not on the ground. Okay, that's not so bad. You know? But, you know, that was his situation. And because he's absorbed in the Lord came to him. Here, Pulkit Maharaj is absorbed in the Lord and in the form of the Ganges and in the form of the sages, then Krishna comes to him. Right, so this is the principle is that we have the material auspicious, inauspicious. That's simply so that we understand that there's difference. Right? It's like a stepping stone, right? You learn A, B, C, right? No, but the idea of English is not that you know this cute little song where you can connect all the 26 letters together. It's that you can take these letters and make them into words, words into clauses, clauses into sentences that you want to communicate. Right? Does that make sense? Right? So, the whole idea is right and wrong is simply so we can ultimately tell the difference between right, meaning spiritual, wrong, meaning material. Right? But because we're materialistic, we're motivated, we're fruitive, then we start off by this will get us a good material result, that will give us a bad material result. Right? Then we come to the next level where this will get us out of the material world, this will keep us in the material world. Right? Does that make some sense? Then we'll get to the stage where this gets us into the material world and this gets us out of the material. I mean, gets us into the spiritual world and this gets us out of the material world. Right? So the material world isn't so much the situation. Does it make sense? So it's a step that we're trying to get. But we start off. The scripture talks language we'll understand. And the language we understand is fruitive. Right? We do. Like, give an example. Cold bath in the morning. No one likes to take a cold bath in the morning. And figuring that devotees were not in a fruitive mentality, then when it lists, the Pancharatra lists about 6-8 benefits you get for the cold morning bath. You know, it brightens the skin, improves the semen, improves the intelligence, makes the glow. And because we put the book together in the 80s, I left out the one I thought this is too materialistic, that it makes one attractive to the opposite sex. So I dropped that from the book. Then, one time I mentioned it, not long ago, and then I was informed some months later that a lot of people started taking cold baths when they heard that, you know, these were generally unmarried young people, that it made them attractive to the opposite sex. So then I thought, well, maybe I should have left it in because at least they'd be taking a bath, right? So that's why the Vedas are written this way, because unless we, you know, in the beginning, we see what am I going to get from this? You know, what's the benefit? You know, so like that. Otherwise, it's just a ritual. It's a rule. It's dry. It gets in my way. I didn't grow up like that. But there. So, but what Krishna is trying to do is get us that we're attached to the material world. We should be attached to Him. Right? That's the real thing. Attachment's not the problem. It's what we're attached to. But in the beginning, we have to break that attachment by saying attachment to the material world is bad. And we say attachment to Krishna is good, but generally that part we don't catch. We just look at detachment from the material world. So it may make one a little dry for a while. But if one continues with the process, keeps the association of devotees, doesn't offend devotees, like that, keeps that purpose to become attached to Krishna, then that starts to grow. Then the taste comes. And when the taste comes, then one is not worried about the material attachment. That's the process. So here then, if we approach with this different view, then many things that we would consider inauspicious are actually very auspicious, because they make us remember Krishna. Maharaj Parikshit is here, he's running his kingdom, he's doing his service, and the facility is nice, he becomes attached to it. Not that it's in the way of his devotional service, but Krishna then, by, through the curse of the Brahman, removes that. So he sees that this is Krishna. The curse of the Brahman, he sees it was Krishna. Krishna came to me in this form. So that's, you know, different. Then one takes it in a different way. Otherwise, he could be jumping up and down, complaining in his court to the ministers, and saying this is wrong, and doing so many things, you know, calling his, you know, different priests and that, what rituals we can do to avoid this, and, you know, so many things. But he's not, because being a devotee, he doesn't bother with that. He sees it that the Lord has come, we're attached, like that. One may ask, well, how is it the great personalities get attached? It's just easy, it's comfortable, the obstacles aren't great. So it's just a matter of getting adjusted to something new. You're already doing something, it works, so naturally one's attached to it. Jivas are attached, they're energy. Only Krishna can deal with something and not be attached. Otherwise we get attached to everything, right? Like that. You get a pen, it works. You get attached to it. When you bought it, you weren't attached to it. But by using it, you get attached. That's just the way jivas are. So that's why whatever you get attached to, if it's connected to Krishna, then there's no problem. Then there's no problem. And then ultimately, still, even that will be left. But one will advance by one's attachment to things in relationship to Krishna. Any questions on this?
If you do something, some activity, then you get some material results from it. For example, like when you get deeper in it, you attend Radha festival or something like that. And sometimes we preach to the general Western people that were elected for Radha. And then some people, they also say some kind of material benefits like that, say, from Radha, from Radha to Mahdi.
Question comes up is that on this fruitive side, that scriptures may say so many things that appear as fruitive, like you go to Rath Yatra by seeing the deity, you're freed from so many lifetimes of sinful activities like this. So some will use that in their preaching, and some will say that no, this encourages Namaparad, because then you're seeing the holy name or the process as karmakanda. The principle given in the Shastra is it's all correct. If one sees how the two aren't in contradiction, then you will know how to apply either one of them. Does that make some sense? That's the principle. Like you get a cut on the finger or you have a cut on your toe. If you can understand the similarity between them, then you can properly give medicine. Otherwise, you know how to put it on your finger, but if you get it on your toe, then you won't know what to do. The principle is that we turn to the Lord for whatever benefit we want. Right? That's the principle. So that they're turning to the Lord, that's the point. So turning to the Lord is what's emphasized. And depending upon the audience, then, you know, the element of, you know, everything will be nice for them, or they'll be freed from material entanglement, or they'll go back to Godhead. So we emphasize the element going back to Godhead and all that. We would not emphasize the point, the fruitive points given. They may be mentioned, but they're not emphasized. You know, it's just like you have a meal. Without the salt, there's no taste, but we don't emphasize it. You know, we don't put a big pile of salt and point out the salt and say, hey, this is a great meal, look at that pile of salt. You know? You know what I'm saying? So the point is because people may be motivated, what works for them is there. We always start from the top. But the point is they should be doing something in connection with the scriptures. Right? Does that make sense? So, but they should understand, just like here, Prabhupada uses the words auspicious, and things should be auspicious. He's defined Maharaj Parikit is sitting on the bank of the Ganga, right, with the kusa grass. The kusa grass, the roots are pointing east, the tips are pointing west. Right? He's facing north. So he says this is all favorable for devotional service, because things that are auspicious are favorable, because it creates a nice atmosphere. But it's favorable because it enhances devotional service, or enhances the situation in which we can more easily appreciate devotional service. Does that make sense? Just like prasad is special. People will know it. Just standing there, you just hold out their hand, you give it to them. People who don't know, they may not appreciate that, you know, getting a lump of halva with sweet rice all over it in their hand. They may not appreciate it. So they'll get it on a plate. You know, you have to give them a spoon. You have to give them a place to sit or some place where they can feel comfortable. Then they'll appreciate the prasad. You could say, well, that's very fruitive. They want to maintain their Western, you know, identity and standards of sophistication and all that. And why can't they just give up their ego and respect and honor prasad? But the point is to take the prasad. You know what I'm saying? If they take the prasad, then we've attained our goal. Like that. Endeavor must be there. You must find what it is that the people appreciate. And through that medium, give them Krishna. You know, like you say, you become liberated from all material. But what is real liberation? Real liberation is going back to Godhead. Because even if you're liberated from so many sinful reactions, still you're in the material world. Right? The mind may be very peaceful. It may not have much external harassment. You may have good facility, but you're still here. And because you'll get attached to it, therefore you're going to do something you shouldn't, and then it will go away. So it's still not liberation. Does that make sense? So you may use the terms and this and that, you know, it's like, does that make sense? But, you know, it says after death, it means after, you know, after this life, then you go to that place where it's deathless. So the materialist thinks the heavenly planets, because that's Amara. No one dies in the heavenly planets. They die in the space between earth and heaven, right? You're tossed out, you die while you're falling between the two. That they don't tell you, but you know. You know, it's like that. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, like how you'd say, in the club, no one gets beaten up, right? But you make trouble, the bouncers catch you, take you outside, and beat you up out on the sidewalk. So you could easily put up a big poster, no one gets beaten in this club. And it would be right. You know what I'm saying? So that's Amara. Or then the impersonal, so think Amara means the Brahman. But you're still going to fall from there. So Amara actually only means going back to Godhead. So anything that has its own unique definition in karma, jnana, yoga has its original definition in bhakti. So that's the point, is we have no problem using the terminologies and even the examples or even the processes that are given in karma, jnana, and yoga, because for us, we use the original definitions. We don't use their definitions. Right? Yoga, you control the breath. Okay, yes, we're chanting our japa. That controls the breath. We're engaged in devotional service. The breath is controlled. Right? We're doing what's right and wrong for devotional service. That's yama, niyama. Right? Asana, we situate ourselves in a situation in which we can perform the devotional service. Asana is to be in a situation in which you can control the breath. So then breath is your energy, it's your activity. So your activities then. So we purify, you know, what our attractions and attachments are. We create the auspicious situation for devotional service. We engage in devotional service. Then we pull in the senses from the sense, you know, from material and engage them in Krishna's service. Right? Hrishikesha, Hrishikena, Sevanam, Bhakti, Uchita. Right? Then we focus, once the senses are pulled in, we focus on the Lord. We focus. Because then we get something done. Then when we do that, then we try to get Krishna through that. Right? That's where the metaphysics of the, you know, the last chapter of Gita come, last chapters of Gita. That is, you focus, you see material energy, how the modes work, this and that, but then you see behind that, then you put Krishna there, that's jnana. Right? Then from there, then that becomes complete, that becomes samadhi. So we follow exactly the same process. Yoga is our process. Jnana is our process. Karma is our process. Just they've all means for the purpose of the materialists, the definitions have been broadened so that they can be understood from a fruitive perspective. Does that make sense? Because if you get it so narrow and tight that it perfectly defines devotional service, you're going to have a lot of living entities that aren't going to follow anything to do with the scriptures. Does that make sense? Because one comes to the material world not for bhakti. Right? The ones in the material world means that one had the opportunity for bhakti, one left it. So therefore, one has to find a way to catch these people. Does that make some sense? So the problem's not the thing, it's how it's defined. In like problem, we do welfare work, but what is welfare? Right? Welfare means kindness or generosity to others, liberality. That's actual. Welfare, the word, old word would be liberality. But that means that you're kind to others. You want to benefit others. So you can benefit them through food or clothes or a place to stay or medicine or, you know, some kind words. But the real, the Dharma Shastra says the ultimate charity is giving people the scriptures. Right? So Lord Chaitanya says param upakar. Upakar means welfare work. So the supreme welfare is to give Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada, we are doing welfare work. But it's just how you define it. It just depends whether one has the conviction to define it according to our acharyas. Or one has to, liberality has to mean liberal, meaning left, meaning democratic. Does that make sense? So it's just a matter of conviction. If one actually knows the whole process, just like Prabhupada, there's no problem in, you know, we'd feed people. He's the one that said, you know, you have a place and 10 miles around, no one should be starving. But they should know that it should be Krishna conscious. The animals don't know, we just feed them. The people can know that this is prasad in their spiritual life and by taking this one is benefited. Does that make sense? So it's a matter of understanding the higher. Other people get stuck on the lower, then hey, there's a million people that are distributing food. You know? And how much do we distribute? You know? people notice us. There's so many people there, right? We just had, what is it? You had this big thing just recently, right? Can't remember. There's so many of them these days. But devotees were there, and they even got footage. I think they even came on BBC. But they take pictures of them because they're devotees, not because they're just sitting food. Right? Because there's tons of other people there just sitting food. Big international organizations, they're not taking pictures. Because it's devotees. So that's the point, is if we go, but then that's the thing, then we take it from there to Krishna consciousness. But just to be happy that we fed them, and that's good, no. Prasad, they must advance. That's just good. You understand? So it's not what's being done. It's what is the understanding? What is the motive? So if one presents a fruitive element and leaves it at that and doesn't take it through the Krishna consciousness, yes, there's something wrong there. Right? But if one is able to catch the person's attention and then take it beyond, right? Narad Muni comes to these great people, came to Prachina Bhagishad. He is a Karmakandi, you know, par excellence, right? He's done thousands and thousands and thousands of sacrifices. Narad Muni comes to him and says, you know, all those animals you sacrificed are all waiting for you as rurus, and they're waiting to poke you and bite you and scratch you. And the king is like, I never heard of that, because Karmakandis don't talk about that. You only hear about that in the Gyanakanda. The Upanishads talk about it. The Brahmanas don't talk about it. Brahmanas meaning that part of the Veda that deals with ritual. Right? Doesn't talk about it. So, by his mystic power, he showed him all the animals. And then it's like, okay. And then from there, then he told the story of Puranjana. And that's all allegorical about everything that the king does. It's all fruitive and sense-gratic, you know, dharma, artha, and kama. And through that, because Narad Muni is a transcendentalist, he presents that from the platform of transcendence. So he makes the connection. You know what I'm saying? Just to say, hey, you know, you can get on this bus, it's going to take you somewhere, it's a great bus, you know, it's got, you know, luxury bus, nice seats, you know, it's got video, you know, it's like that, it's even got a bathroom in the back. Nice, okay, you got him on a bus, but where's the bus going? They don't know where they're going, so they may get off somewhere, or they may just ride around in the bus, hey, this is great. They have to tell them, this bus is going to take you there, this is a nice bus to take. Does that make sense? So that's the point. If that's understood, then someone who's simple, you leave them simple. Someone who's sophisticated, you show them how to engage that sophistication. Someone's wealthy, they don't have to give it all up. They have to engage it. Brihat Maharaj was engaging it. The Pandavas were engaging it. Ultimately, you have to give it up. They should know that, but they'll give it up in their own time. All right? Does that make sense? Not the temple needs money, so hey, let's get this rich guy to, you know, give up everything and sell it all and give it to us. No, that's not. How is he going to advance? Because he'll move in the temple, and after a few weeks he'll leave again. Right? So then, it's a matter, he does. Does that make sense? So that's the principle. Is that okay? Anything else? Yes, ma'am.
Just to emphasize that we've been well covered in Sydney, Australia, right now, for sure, qualifies the national. They're going out to the Philippines on the side. There's a lot of people, and the Krishna cares about it. And they're giving so open hearted.
Yeah, very good. Much of you were just saying, so devotees are approaching as devotees and saying that we're doing these things to Siddhi Prasad, and people are giving money for it. Like that. So that's,
to attend Krishna, there are many ways. Bhakti Yoga, Gyan Yoga, Karma Yoga, Shankha Yoga. There are many ways. But Krishna himself says that Bhakti Yoga is the best way and the easiest way, isn't it? So, why we are getting so much trouble? We are reading Shastras, doing this, doing karma, to attend Krishna. Why we are doing so much?
Why are we doing so? Oh, it says so bhakti is the best. Why are we reading Shastra and doing so many other things?
Yes.
Because these are all branches of bhakti. Right? It's just like, okay, your children have to eat food, right? Yes? Okay, so do they only eat only grains? Or only vegetables? Or only, you know, salty things? Or chaat? Or only sweets? Does that make sense? So all of these are branches of the meal. You say, come to my house for rice. That doesn't mean you're only going to get rice. It means you're going to get everything that goes with rice. Yeah? Okay. Now, in this, the living entity is conditioned. And because they're conditioned, they're not going to just take up just chanting Hare Krishna. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Because the living entity is used to being in the material world, they're going to act along that. Like you're saying, why do we have to go, means we want to make it practical, why do we have to study Shastra? We should just do bhakti. But then, why do you have to go to the shop and buy a new sari every couple of days, and a new salwar, and a new chadar, and fancy glasses, and do your hair? Because what has that got to do with bhakti? You understand?
My another question is...
No. Let's finish this question. You understand? So you are used to dressing like this and behaving like this, and so you continue like that. And then the result of that, you connect to Krishna. You look clean, you look nice, and you go to the temple, you do your puja, you interact with the devotees. Does that make sense? So scripture, we could say, would be more of a direct connection to Krishna, because the scripture is Krishna and it's given by Krishna, than, let's say, feeding our children, or cleaning our house, or making money, or going to a relative's wedding. But in your question, those things are not, we're not doubting those. Those are going to go on just as the normal Hindu life. But why do I have to do scripture? Why can't I just, you know, for 3 minutes a day think in my heart of Krishna and then that's it? And then the other 24 hours, you know, 59 minutes and, what do you call it, you know, and 30 seconds, then I'm Hindu. Does that make some sense? Yeah. So the point is because we're conditioned, therefore the scriptures give us direction how to engage that. You have to take a bath. How do you take a bath? Right? Do you take a bath then brush your teeth, or do you brush your teeth then take a bath? Right? So this is given by scripture. That way it's all engaged in the service. Why do you pierce your nose and not your cheek? That's given by Shastra. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. So without scripture, we won't know what to do. So therefore, from Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, then we're able to engage properly in devotion, because we don't know what devotion is. Sentiment can be engaged in devotional service, but sentiment is not devotion. Right? Just like you have food, it's not prasad, but food, pure food can be offered to Krishna, and then it becomes prasad. Right? So we may have sentiment, we may have emotion. So it's there. We're directing it at our husband, at our mother, at our children, at our other friends and relatives, at the poor people. So we can also connect that to God. But only when it's connected to God, it becomes devotion. So that emotion, we have to know what is emotion and how it works, then we can learn how to connect it and what are the processes. So that's why we must have scripture. And we have to have many situations to practice that. So we come to the temple, we practice at home, we practice preaching, we practice in the association of devotees, we practice alone, like this. You know, all these different ways we learn to practice. So all day, 24 hours, 7 days a week, then we are engaged in devotional service. So that's why the scriptures give us so many aspects.
Excuse me. Suppose that man is totally ignorant, he doesn't read, write, and he is burdened with his family, so he doesn't get time to practice all this, things. Mm-hmm. But he is totally dedicated to Lord Krishna, to his mind.
Mm-hmm.
So, what happens? He will never attend.
Okay, what happens? 2 points. One is, he will attain because of his devotion. But second, look around this room. Where is this person? Is there any person that you personally associate with that's like that? No. It's only a theory. It's a great theory. But the point is if you do have such a person, he will advance. But you're not such a person. You're educated. Everyone else in this room is educated. Everybody that you'll even talk to is educated. Maybe the rickshaw wala that you get in is rickshaw, or the taxi wala, or the sabji wala, but you don't talk to those people. So don't worry about it. The point is if you absorb yourself in thinking about Krishna, you'll go back to Godhead. But you're an educated, sophisticated person. You do read books. You do watch movies. You do talk to your friends. You do eat food. So is that connected to Krishna? That's what you have to worry about. Don't worry about the little rickshaw wala down the side of the road, and because he only thinks about it, therefore nobody has to think. You're not a rickshaw wala.
Excuse me. If one of my friends is rickshaw wala.
One of your friends is not a rickshaw wala, so don't give me all these theoretical things that don't exist. If you want to just have a good discussion and argument, great. Do that somewhere else. If you want to understand how to apply this in your life, ask the question. If you just want to give me, you know, typical Hindu answers and that, to just find a fault and, well, it could be this way because you're smart, I've had enough of it. I've been in India 30 years, I don't need one question more like this. You want to learn how to use it for your own personal life? Great, we can talk all day. But if you want to talk about theoretical people that don't exist, I'm not interested. Do that with your friends. Okay, thank you. Okay, so we'll end here. Jai Ho. Vantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Prabhupada ki, Prabhupada Bhaktivedanta ki, Jaina Dagavu Rupanita ki.
Here's the wind. Thank you.
wonderful.
Can I ask a question?
That's if you're from Manhattan, Brooklyn. Once there was a gathering of cities.
I'm not.
And this question was raised. And the speaker said, I'm sure this is a very
thanks, man. That is, the end was the best. We loved it. Yeah. Very good. Very nice. Is it to the point? Yeah.
We love it. The real, real Qatar entertainment wrapped in one. Wow.
In the 10 minutes example of Bhakti Thakur versus Parashuram to be the cause of destruction of more or less disturbance of our nation, because he was a Kshatriya by nature, he came to be Brahman. I didn't understand that point, why he mentions Shakti Vesh, or at least I think he's a very efficient Parashuram. So how did he...
That doesn't mean that means who else can destroy Varnashrams, the Lord, so who else can destroy the Lord himself?
They just establish it through the yoga, then he also destroys.
It has to be broken down a bit, but at the same time he's establishing, but at the same time is, I guess, broken down.
Supposed to be broken down in Korea?
Because that's what people want. Yeah. We can sit and we can discuss it.
Sorry?
I said we can sit and we can discuss it. Okay, means all we can discuss it. Yeah. So his question is,
is it just when you take 3 drops of water and you put the Ganga in your hand, is it the same as going?
If it's either you can't swim or you don't have the opportunity, yeah.
There's no time. It's the same.
Yeah.
Especially, it's considered to be the same, isn't it?
Yeah, it means you should have the same focus and mentality. Then.
As long as you have the same focus and mentality, of course.
Then it'll be
the same. Yes, the mentality is the most important. Yes.
Question is this, you're saying, who? In Jayavadharma, it says that. In Chaitanya Shikshamrita, the Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions that one of the causes of the breakdown of Varnashram is Parasuram, because he is a Brahmin who is acting as a Kshatriya. So, because this is happening then in the Treta Yuga, then already there's a breakdown. Right? Means that the only in the satya, then everything's working nice, they're all hamsa. So you don't need to establish really the whole social situation, because people are going to naturally follow it. Does that make sense? They're going to do what's proper, they're going to do what's good for the sadhana. That's just the way they are. But in the Treta Yuga, then one leg of Dharma is lessened. Right? So then that's there. So the Kshatriyas aren't listening to the Brahmins. Kshatriyas aren't going to correct it because they're not there. So only a Brahmin can correct it. So he's going to do it in language they understand. So he comes out. There is some aspect in history, I don't know it, but I just know that there's something to do with, I think there was some yajna or something done in which there was some, the remnants from the sacrifice were for having a child. So one was for having a Brahmin, one was for having a Kshatriya, the two got mixed up. And so then Janmadagna's wife got the one for the Kshatriya, and the king got the one for the Brahmin. So that would explain there. But the point is by doing this, then in that way, then it also sets a mood that you could go out, work outside of your, how you say? Outside of your, you know, your ashram or dharma. So you could say that one element. Another element that you could take is because he destroyed the kings, then without the kings, then you won't have varnashram, because they establish it. Brahmins make kings, kings make varnashram. Right? Does that make some sense? So these different elements are there. Because then one might take example. Just like this, the reason of on the widow begetting the brother, someone begetting children on the brother's wife, or she's a widow, that was started by Vena. So it's actually not approved by the Vedas. It's not, or let's say, it works in the other yugas. You can't use it in Kali Yuga, but it works in the other yugas. But Manu doesn't consider it good. You know what I'm saying? It's not sinful, but it's not good. But it may be used. The Pandavas were born like that, you know, but the wife wasn't a widow. But there's other cases where they were, then, what is it? Pandu's, you know, mother and Dhritarashtra's mother, they were widows. You know what I'm saying? So, niyoga on a woman whose presence, whose husband's present but is unable to have the children, that's one thing. You know, it's peculiar, but it works. But that a widow would be appointed to have children by another man, that Manu doesn't think is good. It's started by Vena, and it's considered for cattle, right, for animals. But it's used. You know what I'm saying? So it's not good. Does that make sense? So it may have to be used, but it's not good. Because as soon as he goes out, then he is a Kshatriya. But at the same time as he's still getting the respect and dealings of a Brahmin, like Dronacharya, he still dealt with it as a Brahmin, but he's out on the battlefield, he's a Kshatriya. Kshatriyas are Kshatriyas, Brahmins are Brahmins. He's a Brahmin, he gives advice, he sits back in the tent. Or he's a Kshatriya, he comes out, then no one respects him as a Brahmin. But to take both, that's not considered good. But Parasram as the Lord, then he's doing that. Does that make sense? Well, you'd have to give the whole situation, because one sentence you can't tell the mood. To see what's the bigger, that's that page. What is the point the Acharya is trying to make? You understand? I'll give you an example. Okay, how you say? You're giving an example, right? So this example is not actually the point. Right? We can give an example like we discussed before. We're talking about food. The point's not food. The point's in engaging your needs in Krishna's service. That makes sense? So you have to see what's the bigger picture. That's a detail within the bigger. He's trying to establish Varnashram. And there's some element that is breaking down Varnashram. And he's using that as the example. So it's not necessarily that. So it's the example is not necessarily wrong. Just like we may give the dog as a bad example. But at the same time, the scriptures can also talk about the good qualities of a dog. Right? Or the dog can be, you know, the dog eater, the Brahmin, we don't make the distinction. You know what I'm saying? So the point's not the dog. The point is good qualities, the dog happens to have them. Or the point is bad qualities, the dog happens to have them. Or the point is getting off the bodily platform, the dog happens to have a body. Does that make sense? So whenever you don't understand the detail, you have to look at the context. And from the context, you have to see what's the bigger context. Because that would be in a chapter. The chapter's making a point. The chapter is part of the book that's making a point. So sangati means you see the verse in connection with the verses before and after, with the chapter, with the book, and with other scriptures. That's sangati. So you just have to go back and look with more, you know, how you say, detail as to what is the point. Because if the detail doesn't make sense, it's because we're missing the principle that he's trying to make. So you go back, try to find that, then it would make, you know, sense more why he used that as an example. You know, he could use Duryodhana, he could use so many others, but Krishna's making the point, better to do your duty than someone else's. This comes from Dharma Shastra also. Gita says it, Dharma Shastra says it. Because if you don't do your duty, how do you relate? How do I have a relationship with somebody? A Brahmin is someone you can trust. You can say whatever you like, you can deal, and that's the way it goes. Kshatriya, you can't. Right? A Brahmin, you can be open, a Kshatriya, you're diplomatic. So, what's your relationship with Parasaram? He's the Lord. Okay, that's there. Only the Lord can come and do that. But my point is what is wrong with that? It's because how does someone else have a relationship with you? Does that make sense? He's a Brahmin, so therefore he's to be respected that way. At the same time, he's acting as a Kshatriya. What is the relationship? Does that make sense? Because relationship is the point. Right? You should stick to your duties, because your duties are going to take you back to Godhead, right? You have an attachment, let's say, to Prasad. Okay? So then to engage that attachment, that would be what you're supposed to do. To engage fasting, that's someone else's. Someone else is attached to fasting. You know what I'm saying? So they engage fasting in Krishna service. The person who likes to take prasad engages taking prasad in Krishna service. You know what I'm saying? Because if you fast, okay, that's great. You fasted, you didn't eat, you controlled the senses, but you still didn't engage your desire in Krishna service. So your mind is not engaged in Krishna service. You've engaged your body. You've engaged your activity, but you didn't engage your mind. So it's not complete. Does that make sense? Therefore, one sticks to one's own duties. Right? So Parasaram is God. He's come for a purpose and all that. But if someone followed in his example, that would not be beneficial. So he can only be the breakdown of Varnashram if someone follows his example. You understand? But if people simply see him as the Lord, then there's no problem. He's an exception on the rule, because in emergency, one may break the rule. Yudhishthira makes this point. In an emergency, what is right may be wrong. And what's wrong may be right. Just like in the court. To lie in the court, you know, perjury is illegal. Right? But it's illegal to give evidence that will cause the death of somebody. You understand? Even though it's true. So, material worlds like that. Does that make sense? With the beauty. Beauty is coming from, we had mentioned here, from the mentality. And specifically in here, then the example is given from the attachment. Yeah. Because the devotee's beauty comes from their attachment to Krishna. But on the material platform, then it's their attachment to whatever is attached. Just like if you're attached to mountain climbing, then when you get around the mountain, you become very beautiful. You become attractive. But the external is not the point. It's a matter of the mood. Like that. Because the mood is just like you can take the same person. Let's say you take a girl who's attractive. If she's in a good mood, she looks nice. If she's in a bad mood, she doesn't look nice. But the facial features, nothing changed. You know what I'm saying? Like that. You don't see any models on the front of Vogue magazine in a bad mood. You know what I'm saying? Nobody goes backstage in the green room and takes photos of the models. You never see one picture backstage. They're just ugly backstage. So only when they hit the catwalk, then they look good. So that's the point, is it's not the features. Some features can carry more, like a big vessel can hold more water, a small one, smaller one, but they all hold water. So it's the water that makes it, gives it its purpose. So that particular attachment then is good. You know, I mean, in that way it creates the beauty. But what Prabhupada is taking it through is the natural beauty, which is actually Krishna conscious beauty. The material beauty is we've developed that, we've taken that on ourselves, we've accepted that, but it's not actually our natural beauty. Because that's the thing, devotees are unique because of they have a special beauty like that. Because they're just very nice and attractive. And beauty means attractive. Because what's beautiful can be different. You know, just like for little fat babies, men are little fat babies, but the women, they're cute and this and that. You know what I'm saying? So those things can change. You know what I'm saying? So, does that make some sense? Are we getting anywhere here? So what's the confusion? The confusion is, if there's no physical beauty, how do we call it beauty? Is the confusion, if there's no physical beauty, why do we call it beauty? But my point is take any beautiful person, and when they're not in a good mood, are they beautiful? They're not. So what makes them beautiful? Why are they in a good mood? Their attachments are going properly. Right? The mother's at home, all the kids are gone, husband's gone, is she beautiful? Yes or no? No, as soon as the kids walk in, she becomes beautiful. The husband walks in, she becomes beautiful. That's the point. The girl is a model, she's beautiful, right? Okay, she's beautiful because she's attached to looking beautiful and people knowing that she looks beautiful. So you put her in front of a camera, that means people are going to know she's beautiful, she looks good. Backstage, she does not have to look good, she does not look good. So my point is the beauty is not the body, it's the projected mood of the body. That's the point. Life is beautiful. So life means there's an attachment to something. Right? There's no attachment, one feels dead. If one has strong attachment, one feels inspired. Right? Does that make sense? Right? So the whole point is it's not the body. By being attached to Krishna, then you're attached to who is the most beautiful. And that attachment is the greatest of any attachment. And it's eternal, so it creates a very unique beauty. As a devotee, you should be attracted to the mood. Yes, that's the, because everything else will come anyway. The mood is nice, it'll come anyway. The mood is good, then it's nice. What is as beautiful as one gets if one is pleasant? You know, like that. And if one's not, then one is that much less. You know, but our purpose is not to be beautiful. Our purpose is to be connected to Krishna. Then that comes as a side thing. You know, it's just like we honor Prasad, and as a side thing, we become satisfied. You know, we're not hungry anymore. Does that make sense? He's not nice with the devotees. Okay. So the person is very absorbed in the deity worship, but is not nice with the devotees. So that's what Purkit Maharaj said, and be a friend of all living entities. Because deity worship is not complete until you're nice with the devotees. Like that. You can't be nice to a man and not nice with his children. The two go together. Right? Like that. Or you can be nice with him away from his family. But you can't get intimate and be with his family. So that means you won't be able to get intimate and be with devotees. Does that make sense? Means that the most dangerous means to not be in the association of devotees and be able to take advantage of that. Does that make sense? Like that. So, as an animal, then you don't necessarily, you're not absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Right? It means we hear the example of Jarabharat, then previous life, then he was a deer who was fully conscious. So he was absorbed. Like that. But other than him, you don't really hear of any other example. Does that make sense? So that's there. But, so, following the animal kingdom is one thing, but here is, those who are not devotees are going to fall into the animal kingdom. Right? The devotees may fall, but it's temporary. But for the others, they'll fall into there, they'll be gone a long time, and who knows when the other come in contact with Krishna consciousness again. Or they haven't. So by coming in contact with Krishna consciousness, one's saved from the whole ocean of material existence. Right? Does this make some sense? Yeah. So you have that combination, is even if the devotee does fall into that situation, it's not long. Right? It's just enough to make give the example. Is that okay?
My second question is, in Shrishpati, in the Nectar instruction, you said that we shouldn't endeavor for more than it is. But I was wondering...
We should not over... How does it imply to ourselves to endeavor for material things? Now there he's giving the point, don't over-endeavor. It's a matter of over-endeavor. It means material things are there. Everything you do is, it's like you're in the material world and you're using your material facility in Krishna's service. Right? Does that make sense? Your body is what? Spiritual or material? Okay, and then it has to eat, it has to sleep, you have to go to the bathroom, you have to bathe, you have to dress it. Right? The cloth you're wearing, is that spiritual or material? Yeah. So, the point is everything you deal with, except for the name, the deity, you know, the scriptures, like that, and the devotional platform is material. But it's engaged in Krishna's service, so it becomes spiritualized. Right? So it's as good as spiritual, just like Prabhupada gives the example of the copper wire. The copper wire is not electricity, but you connect it to electricity. Can you come on now? But you connect it to electricity, and then, how do you say? It becomes as good as.
Thursday, Friday. So if there's anyone you know who you know is interested, let them know.
Okay.
So we don't have any way of officially announcing. Okay. But tomorrow we will introduce it, and from Tuesday we'll start.
Okay.
Like that. But tomorrow we'll take each one who wants to register and be part of it.
Okay.
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 Does that make some sense? So, you have to deal with material endeavor anyway, so you don't over-endeavor for the material aspects of what you're engaging in Krishna's service. Does that make sense? Like, you need to eat, so you don't over-endeavor for that. What comes easy, then you'd be happy with that. You know, you go to prasad and you're late and all that's left is some rice and you check around, there's nothing else, and you'd be satisfied. You don't go to a whole big thing to, you know what I'm saying? It's with the natural endeavor of what comes easily, that's all you do. With direct service, that you may take more endeavor. But even then, it should be a matter of it's beneficial to Krishna, not that it's a prestige or something like that, or it's a challenge. Or, you know. But even if that's there, then, okay, do that for Krishna, but Krishna will catch you later on for that. But at least you've engaged it. But eventually, if prestige is important to you, or this or that, Krishna will catch you on that. Does that make sense?
He will get you
Then you'll be faced with the choice that whether your particular attachment is important or not. Like that. You know, is it so important that it's worth the over-endeavor? Right? Not a problem. You have attachment. You work in that realm of that attachment connected to Krishna. But to over-endeavor in that, where then your Krishna consciousness becomes compromised, that's not so important. Does that make sense?
Okay. Could you explain, sir, what is action in inaction?
Inaction in action. Action in inaction, inaction in action. Means the example is given of the impersonalist that he doesn't deal with material energy, but he still has the mentality of being, you know, the Lord of creation. So even though physically he's not active, still he's materially absorbed. And so that is action in inaction. It appears that the sadhu is not active, but still he's materially has desire. Inaction in action means the devotee is performing seemingly material activities, like going to the market, buying sabji, bringing it back, cooking, but he's doing that for Krishna. So even though it's action, it's not giving any karma. While the non-devotee who is detached from material energy may not be performing any endeavor on the material platform, but still their mentality is there, so still they're materially absorbed.
Yes.
Anything else?
I was wondering, how great is the difference between
Agyata and Gyata Sukriti?
Yeah,
In relation to bhakti. Agyata Sukrita and Gyata Sukrita. Agyata means you don't know it's devotional service. You know, Prasad's nice and, you know, they have nice festivals and they sing nicely and, you know, they're nice people to be around. So one is purified, one makes advancement. So from doing a Gyata Sukrita, you get the opportunity to do it again. Right? Does that make sense? And so when that builds up enough, then you become conscious of what are devotees, what is prasad, what is the devotional process. So only when you become conscious, then you actually take up seriously the sadhu sangha and bhajana kriya. You can say bhajana kriya. Bhajana kriya means you're conscious. Right? Does that make sense? But a gyata sukriti will bring you to the platform of shraddha, in the association of devotees. So when you actually appreciate the devotee, you're conscious, then that's when you'll come to the point of bhajana kriya. So you have to become conscious. Because our whole point of the mission is to become Krishna conscious. So that means you're conscious, and that consciousness is focused on Krishna. So if you're not conscious, how will you be Krishna conscious? Does that make sense? You know, if you can't close the door, if you're messy and untidy and this, and don't notice people and how you interact and everything, one may be absorbed in one's own service, but not being so conscious, you won't be able to take your service farther. That's why Prabhupada says, all inauspicious matters are removed from the path of a progressive devotee. Prabhupada uses, he didn't say devotee, he says progressive. It means he's actually progressing, he's dynamic in his Krishna consciousness. Then things are removed. Does that make sense? What about in relation to non-devotees?
Say, you're giving something to prasad and the person doesn't know that it's prasad.
Yeah, they'll get less benefit than if they know it's prasad and acknowledge that. It means Krishna mentions this in the Krishna book at Govardhan Puja. This, he asked Dandababa, what is this festival of, you know, worshipping Indra? And he said, we don't know. It's just always been there, we just do it. So then Krishna makes the point is that by doing something auspicious, you get benefit, but one who has knowledge, when he does it, gets more benefit. Because if you only do it, then it's only by attachment you're doing it. So it's either increasing your attachment or you're becoming less attached to it and you'll stop it. So in either way, it's not necessarily beneficial. You know what I'm saying? So your attachment will just go somewhere else. But the point is, attachment is supposed to be focused. So if it's focused on ritual, it should stay properly on the ritual. You can go from that to Krishna. You can give up ritual for Krishna, but you don't give up this ritual and then take up another one. Does that make sense? Just because you get bored with it. So knowledge removes the attachment. You're engaged in an activity, and because you have knowledge, then the attachment to the activity or the goal, result of the activity or the situation in which you do the activity, all those become reduced. And because you have knowledge, its connection to Krishna, then you increase your attachment to Krishna. So that's the process, is activities done in knowledge in connection with Krishna, right? Remembering Krishna will take you out of the material world into the spiritual. So the proper performance of the duty and the knowledge, that will purify the material side. Doing it to please Krishna and remembering Krishna, that will take you to Krishna. Is that okay? They don't see to their needs, means?
It's like there is not a lot of care of the devotees. The manager.
So if the manager doesn't care for the devotees, then the devotee's service becomes a jata sukriti?
It's like, for example, when we go to the event, sometimes the devotees are not satisfied with one of the Indian jacks or brahmins.
Okay, hey, let's do this. What is the point? What's the actual question? This is the background. What is the question? One sentence.
I heard from some devotees.
No, this is still background. What's the question?
Okay, so the question is how I measure in simultaneously fulfill his duties by engaging other people, and in the same time to reward other people feeling that they are doing something for the higher purpose of this particular institution or family. But in the same time they are doing that they get proper personal care.
One is basically his education, his knowledge, because the devotee should know what they're doing and why they're doing it and how it connects to the mission. Then they're part of it, so they're inspired. They don't feel left out. You know what I'm saying? If it's just a matter you do it because the one person's the authority, it's correct from the management side of Krishna consciousness, but because it's the whole mission is an educational institution, and we are voluntary, so we dedicate ourselves to the mission. There should be that sense of how do you say? Self-motivation that we are part of this mission. We want to see the mission develop. That's one thing. Two is then the managers can be more, you know, try to be sensitive to the particular uniqueness of the needs of the individuals. But that also then is tempered by the particular kind of situation it is. You know what I'm saying? In other words, let us say the project is community. So then there it's a matter of you're supplying Krishna consciousness and you're encouraging to engage their material facilities in Krishna service. Right? You're not expected to supply them. The temple, then those who are living in the temple, then the temple is arranging things for them. But the temple is arranging them according to the temple arrangements. They can't provide facility that the community has. So the temple can't expect that the community will live like the temple, nor can devotees who live in the temple expect they'll be provided with the facility of the community. You know what I'm saying? So it must also be adjusted with that. And then you have the particular uniqueness of, you know, the individual, their ashram, their particular nature, their background, you know, conditioned nature. You know, Asians will act in one way, Europeans in another way, and like this, you know, Americans another way, you know, like this. You know, so then you're going to have that also. So then that's, you know, generally, that also needs to be considered. You know, at the same time as if you're in an area where you only have people of that mentality, then it's easier to cater to than if you're in a cosmopolitan environment. Is in a cosmopolitan environment, then you kind of have to find a neutral. The most widespread cosmopolitan environment is America. So, so one will find that facilities are what is exactly in line with the particular thing being done. And the emotions are kept to just what works. You know what I'm saying? So that is the tendency if you're dealing in more cosmopolitan. Otherwise, then one has to find more like-minded persons who one will get that support one's looking for. You know, emotionally or physically or whatever it requires. Right? Or pick a different aspect of the mission to work with that naturally provides that. Like that. You know, so it can be both ways. The leaders try to make it work at the same time as the individual has to see that, you know, that they're also properly situated. So between that combination, generally you can make it work. Is that okay? Yes.
Definition of a progressive devotee, actually, Prabhupada tells us that all inauspicious things will be removed from the path of active or progressive. What does define devotee as active or progressive?
How do you define progressive? Progressive means that they are, how you say, consciously making an effort to improve the devotional service. Like that. It means they're trying to understand the philosophy, apply it in their life, improve the quality of their service. So that's progressive. If they're just how it is, it's okay, and that's good enough, then that's not so progressive. But they're doing service, they will progress. But that as a devotee, they're progressing. But you're not calling them a progressive devotee because they're not dynamically progressing. Because if you're always trying to understand it, it happens more. You know, it's just like you have some people, they're doing an activity. Let's say they learned it from their fathers. And they learned it from their fathers. And they've been doing it for generations. So just do it. They won't even think about it. Maybe occasionally somebody by accident or a little thought comes across some way to do it easier or more efficiently. You know, so every so many generations you might have a little improvement in. But if somebody's trying to think, how can this activity be improved, that it's more, what's weak in it can be improved and what's strong in it can be kept, then you're going to see development much quicker. Does that make sense? Is it?
Yeah, but like sometimes the devotee cannot analyze actually.
A devotee cannot analyze, but they can. The main aspect of progressiveness is desire. Desire is there, but we desire to please Krishna, to attain Krishna. Does that make sense? That's what makes it progressive, because if that's there, then... Because analyze means according to your level. It doesn't have to be so technical. It means you have a brain, and how your brain works, it's analyzing anyway, right? You know, let's say you go and there's 10 items of prasad. You're analyzing. You're deciding whether you're going to eat all of them, or which ones you're going to eat, or eat with what, or what you're going to dress today, or does the bead bag match the star? You're going to be analyzing all that. You know? So, then one can see, is the quality of your service good? Are devotees happy? Are you satisfied with it? Is it getting the results you're supposed to get from it? So just that simple thought can help, but that's based on desire, right? But contemplation gives rise to that desire. But if that desire is there, then you'll contemplate, right? So if the desire is there, then you'll endeavor. If the endeavor is there, then you get a result. Then that result has to be engaged. If it's engaged, then there'll be more desire will come. Does that make sense?
So the desire is amazing.
Yeah, but not material desire, spiritual. That's the point. That's the thing, is that desire, because from desire comes attachment. If you don't desire to serve Krishna, you won't become attached to Krishna. Right? And then if there's not some attachment, you're not going to endeavor. Does that make sense? So we're attached to the idea of becoming a devotee of Krishna. Therefore, we're endeavoring in the devotional process. Right? But when we're attached to Krishna through love, then that endeavor is just very natural. Does that make sense? Between religious sentiment and spiritual endeavor. Or spiritual. Okay. It means the attachment is there, but it's just a matter of, if it's connected to Krishna, it doesn't matter. You know, if one's attached to the deities, going to Mangal Arati or chanting or all that, that doesn't matter, because it being a directly spiritual activity or attached to prasad, then one will be purified, one will advance. So that's the beauty of it. It doesn't matter. But if you want to refine it, then, because you don't want to refine it at the loss of it. Because the impersonal tendency is, if there's nothing to gain from it, I give it up. And the impersonal thing is also, means the path of jnana is attachment's bad. They don't consider spiritual attachment. So I'm attached to worshipping the deity, or going to Mangal Arati. Let's take that. I'm attached to going to Mangal Arati. So if we analyze it, means if one is mature enough, one can analyze, why is one going to Mangal Arati? Is it to see the deity, or it's because I feel if I don't start the day in an auspicious way, the whole day is going to be bad. And I noticed that the days I didn't go to Mangal Arati, then, you know, people argue with me, and the kids were crazy, and this happened and that happened, but the days I went to Mangal Arati went nice. Does that make sense? That's religious. But because it's connected to Krishna, you're going to Mangal Arati and seeing Krishna, it doesn't matter. That's why, for the devotee, religion is not a problem if it's connected to Krishna. So that's the whole point, is all the aspects of one's life, when it connects to Krishna, Then once life becomes dynamic to take you back to Godhead, it's all connected. So even if it's religious, it doesn't matter because it's connected to spiritual, so it becomes spiritualized. So we take religion connected to transcendence, and then one is liberated and goes back to Godhead. The materialists take it and connect it to artha and kama. So that's to be avoided, like that. So religion shouldn't be done for artha, you know, and what you gain from it, it shouldn't be used for sense gratification. You know, it means, in other words, it's to be engaged in Krishna's service. So it doesn't really matter, but one can see what is the motive. If it's like you like going and seeing the deity, it's a nice environment or things like this. If it's the deity is there, if it's just pleasant, it's nice, then that'll be religious. You just like a pure environment, pure, that'll be religious. But because it's Krishna's pure environment, it doesn't matter. But one can be aware, the thing to do in that occasion is not, oh, because it's religious, I should give it up. No, that's why we are, you know, our whole social interaction doesn't work. You know, because women are Maya, kids are Maya, money's Maya, everything's Maya, which it is. But the point is that's what you got and that's what you need and that's what you got to work with, so work with it properly. You know, so everybody has all the Maya, but they ignore it. People have kids, got to have the kids, have to have control of the kids, but they don't take care of the kids. They have their wife, but they don't take care. They have their facilities, they don't take care. You know? Like, how often do you see a devotee who their car is properly maintained? Rare. Because if they maintained it, that would be Maya. But if it's Krishna's car, how is that Maya? Right? We wash Krishna's pots, that's not Maya. But because it's your car, then taking care of it's Maya. So that's what you can see. Does that make sense? So these subtle things, it's not, the problem's not giving it up. So it's a matter of attachments there to something connected to Krishna, like Mangalarti. I may just like the nice atmosphere. But it's a spiritual atmosphere. My appreciation of it is just the situation. So it may be more religious than spiritual. Otherwise, it's a nice atmosphere. But who's in the atmosphere? It's Krishna. The Brajabasis don't notice Braj. They notice Krishna. They only notice Braj and how it's making nice facilities for Krishna's enjoyment. Then they talk about, you know, how everything's very nice and beautiful. But otherwise, to them, they're living in a situation that is unlimitedly more opulent than Vaikuntha. But it doesn't matter to them. You know? It just doesn't matter. Because for them, they just see Krishna. So if you see the situation, that's religious. Because the situation is having the situation is gain, keeping the situation is safety. Right? So gain and safety is religion. Does that make sense? So it's subtle. It's very subtle. But the point is we can only, in the conditioned state, function on the religious platform. So the idea is therefore connected to Krishna. Then it becomes very nice. If it's connected to Krishna, it's perfect. And it doesn't matter it's religious. Does that make sense? You know, you're going to have a picture, but it's a picture of Krishna. You got to have, it's not that I want to look at Krishna, the wall's bare, I got to have some pictures. So I'm a devotee, I have pictures of Krishna. You understand? That's religious. But because the pictures of Krishna, you get the spiritual benefit. So the religion becomes the conduit for the spirituality. Right? You know? The mother is attached to feeding the children. So that's a religious duty. But because she offers the food to Krishna, it's prasad. So the children get benefit, she gets benefit. She's distributing prasad, eating prasad, they're eating prasad. And if she, you know, like that. And if she sees they don't offend it, then everybody... That religiosity becomes a connection. So everybody's attached like that. Someone wants to study. someone wants to be married, someone's had enough of it. These are all religious attachments, right? So they're engaged in Krishna's service. Does that make sense? So the problem isn't, we would only distinguish spiritual and religious if the religious isn't connected to Krishna, right? Or to invoke consciousness of Krishna within it. You know what I'm saying? It means they're going to Mangala, may not be conscious, they're just it's a nice atmosphere. It is Krishna, but they're not conscious. So if they become conscious of it, they'll get more benefit. That makes sense? Because we don't have anything other than religion to actually work with. We don't have. That's what's all around us. You know what I'm saying? The point is to hear transcendental subject matter. Religion is, you know, the book on the here and on the seat and the table and all these things and, you know, arranging all. That's a religion. But by doing this, then we take it seriously. So that's the point. So religion is important as the medium for God consciousness. What we avoid is religion as a medium for fruitive or impersonal gain. Is that okay? So, okay, last point, and then we'll end here.
Remembering Krishna, whenever forgetfulness is given, this is one of the main principle of devotional service. At the same time, it's playing a less purely performance of the famous devotional service, and our remembrance is just a mental idea. Each aspect must be present in our endeavor to attain this spontaneous natural connection to Krishna and to be sure that it's not just some sentiment or other emotional, but must. How should we practice it properly in order to be favored for attaining this real and natural?
Okay, question is on. Always remember, never forget Krishna is the main rules. So, that always remember, never, that is, everything's connected to that. But always remember Krishna, never forget means it may be you're always remembering, but doesn't necessarily mean it's on the platform of, that it itself is on the platform of prema. It means that you're remembering Krishna in connection with the activity that you're doing. You're doing that activity because it's connected to Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah? Just like you know that Krishna likes things pure. Right? So therefore you're conscious to keep everything clean. So that's always remembering Krishna and never forgetting. So the remembrance is the positive aspects that you're connecting to Krishna and the devotees in this direct devotional service. Never forgetting means those elements of your life that are not connected to Krishna. You, that make you forget Krishna, you connect to Krishna. Does that make sense? Does that make sense? No. You know what I'm saying? So, in other words, never always remember Krishna are the things that get you into the spiritual world. Never forget Krishna are the things that get you out of the material world. Does that make sense? Yeah. Don't forget him because you're distracted by material life. So engage that material activities in Krishna's service. Always remember and is understand who you're making that endeavor for. The reason you're doing the one is for the other. And that's why sometimes the definition of yama niyama means yama is giving up, niyama is what you should do. Because you give up the material attachment and you develop the spiritual attachment, because that's how you're going to start. We're in the material world, this goes that way. Okay, does that make sense? Yes, ma'am.
He said he does in his practical understanding be absorbed in the service. So sometimes their practice is as hearing about pastimes with Krishna remembering. So I think that way it's very connected with this emotional and sentimental deal with us. So how to assure that it's really going to be favorable about making us aware of this?
Oh, okay. So is means, yeah. Okay, question is then in hearing about Krishna's pastimes it evokes some emotion, how to see that that's going the right way? One, you're hearing from the proper sources. You have to hear from those who are in the spiritual world or those who are directly connected. You know? In other words, their opinion. You don't want to hear from those who give opinions other than those that are from the spiritual world. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Because otherwise that's popular nowadays. Like that. But the point is Rupa Goswami, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Srila Prabhupada, they are from the spiritual world. They've given a process. You follow that, it'll get you there. You follow the speculative path of others who give their own definitions of what is, you know, bhakti. That doesn't necessarily work. You know what I'm saying? So the point is if it's we're hearing from proper sources with the proper understanding, then it gives you a good result. Does that make sense? Girl will be attracted to boy. So if she learns chastity, learns to control her senses, learns her duties, then when the proper situation is there, the proper range is made, she becomes attached to that boy that she's married, that's fine. But if she just, without knowing these things, and prematurely just becomes attached to boys, then there's no focus that will go anywhere. Right? Because then she's enjoying boys, not serving. Right? You like to hear about Krishna's pastime. Krishna's doing this with Radharani, Krishna's doing that with Radharani. Right? But it's also always, you know what I'm saying? But we're enjoying what he's doing. You know what I'm saying? So that's one, we've connected with Krishna, but how are we being enjoyed by hearing those? That's the point. Does that make sense? That's the point that's not being told. Because otherwise, you're still in the position of Purusha. You know what I'm saying? It's just like you have a boy and a girl are together. Who are you going to see it from? Whose perspective are you going to appreciate that interaction from? The boys or the girls? You.
So the person's a natural.
Yeah, your point of view. So you're going to see, are you going to see what the boy's getting out of it or what the girl's getting out of it? What the girl's getting out of it, no? Okay. Now, when you hear Krishna's pastimes, which one do you look at?
Krishna's.
Yeah, so that's the point. The point is we're still looking at it from the enjoyer, not from the enjoyed. That's the point.
I'm just asking this question, it's very close to everything that we just discussed in the last days, the desire to go back to God, actually is we want to enjoy Krishna.
It's not we want to enjoy Krishna. Wanting to go back to Godhead is not wanting to enjoy Krishna so much. And wanting to go back to Godhead is trying to get out of here. That's all. So, and to do that, we've got to move towards Krishna.
So
if we could get out of here without Krishna, then we'd probably do try for that also.
So, get out of here and Krishna is somehow how practical the main point is not the ultimate expression of
spiritual reaction.
Yeah. So how to turn all this naturally without missing.
So how to adjust that so it becomes turned toward? It's by association. You associate with those who have a more advanced perspective than yourself, then you start to develop that. So you always keep yourself in more advanced association and you'll always advance. Does that make sense? So it's by association. That's all. Okay. So we'll end here because it's late. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samavita Bhaktavrinda ki, Chaitanya Gaura Premanandi.